of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission. With us today, we have Commissioner Sid Lovett, Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, General Counsel. Joining virtually, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the board, and CEO, General Manager, to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. I'll now turn the meeting over to CEO, General Manager, for the briefing and study session. Thank you and welcome, John.
Good morning, Commissioners. Lots of good stuff on the agenda, so we'll get right to it. First up, the community engagement update from our own community superstar, Laura Zurich.
Thank you. I'm going to share a little bit about the events that we've recently attended and then some of the upcoming ones. So we attended the Imagine Children's Museum with our ARC trailer and tons of fun, good educational opportunities for us to engage with kids around the safety of electricity and healthy fear of electricity with the ARC trailer. And then over the weekend, not this past weekend, the weekend before, we had Michelle Stein and Lisa Wheatley drive in the Marysville Strawberry Festival. So we're getting our first of many parades underway. This was kind of a larger event. It was the Everett Station District Alliance, and they had a town hall day. So it's their first one that they've ever had. And it was more of like a resource fair. So they had Snohomish County income qualified program information, as well as kind of the new structures that they're putting out near the Everett Gospel Mission Church or Everett Gospel Mission for folks who are experiencing homelessness. So it was a really fun and educational event. And we are kind of right after that event, we had a great discussion and we're gonna have a training for all of our future event staff, just to help us be a little bit more prepared. And then I'm gonna provide a little bit of our education team summary. So they obviously do tons of different things, but these are just a few of their highlights. They had a great STEM night, and that's the thank you from that STEM night from all the folks that attended and the young kids that attended. They went to a number of different schools and provided presentations to classes just as they normally would, just keeping us out in the community.
What is a WC tour?
Woods Creek.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So they, we have such great stuff for them to just see that, you know, from the beginning all the way to the very end of production and then distribution, the power there. And then upcoming events. So on Monday, a couple of us are going to be going out to the Mukilteo School District and doing some engagement activities with some of the kids that are going to be there. And also, I believe, passing out just some resources that they can take home with them. It's right at the beginning of summer, and sometimes that's a tough time of transition. And then we will be in the Everett 4th of July parade. And this year, it's not organized by the city, so it's been a little interesting, but I'm excited to see how it works out. And I'm really glad that we're going to have one again in the city of Everett.
Are you organizing that yourself?
No. Thankfully, there's another gentleman from North Everett who's doing it, but we're just trying to work together, make sure that our transportation department can support all of these things too, because it's, you know, holidays, Saturday, Sunday sometimes. So want to make sure we're not infringing on their staff too much, but they've been great. And then we'll be in Klahaya Days Parade. And I think John might have a little bit of information about the 3-on-3 basketball tournament that we're potentially going to have you be involved in, but yeah, potentially. But it'll be fun. We may have actually two teams this year, so it'll be fun to see kind of how that works out. And that's right here in downtown Everett as well. and then the Lake Stevens Aqua Fest. So that'll be big, and our water department's going to be supporting that one quite a bit more, but we'll be in both the parade and have a booth.
You have the, just a personal recommendation. I have been to the Sultan Shindy Parade, and they're old-fashioned kind of a community fair. It is really cool. I really have enjoyed it. I went up there 6 years ago, and I've been back twice. It's so much fun.
It's really cute.
High contests, all the old kind of stuff.
We had our line crews actually help replace the spar poles last year, so lots of fun.
John?
Didn't you say pie eating contest? I'm in.
He's in.
I'll do that over the 3-on-3 tournament any day.
It's just kind of a feeling of the 50s. Kind of fair, not all the glitz and whatever. Anyway.
And it does happen on the same day as a number of other things. So the 3-on-3 basketball will be at the same day as the Klahaya. So it just is that time of year. It's going to be good stuff every weekend, fun stuff. And thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, boy. It's impressive all we're doing. I was listening to my car a lot recently, and I listened to the Public Power Underground podcast, which is very interesting. It's all Northwest kinds of things. They were talking about out there ideas, and everyone that was on that day had even out there idea. You know, one was kids and grits, you know, educational material for kids, you know. But this was their out there idea, and we've already been doing it for several years. So then I was thinking, you know, we need Grid Scouts. Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, Grid Scouts, right?
Yes.
I thought you were saying grits.
Yeah, no, not grits. Grid. Kids and grits.
You need to have your first cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Thank you, Laura. So much good stuff going on in the community. Next up, you have the Government Relations Activity Report in your packet, and we have the full GR team here to answer any questions.
So I think I have any. Do you have questions?
No, I would ask them, is there anything that particular that you feel that needs to be expanded upon? I didn't have any initial questions, so but sometimes things go.
Nothing specific.
Okay.
Nothing specific.
Yes, I do have one question on the delay on the building code that required heat pumps instead of gas. So that's been delayed, but it's not off the table. That's a state, Washington State building code issue.
Hi there, Commission. Ryan Collins, Senior Program Manager for Government Relations. In response to that question, yes, it has been delayed. They are not planning on, it's still moving forward. They're tweaking some of the details to conform kind of with the lawsuit that's been moving forward with California. It's currently looking like it'll be October, but again, these things can also change.
Great, thank you.
No problem.
Oh,
you're
question.
Of course.
So I read the article, the Crosscut article included on the carbon auction.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, you know, we're reading more sort of pushback from the public, even Seattle Times, about the effect on gasoline prices. So I'm wondering if there's a conversation in Olympia. Are they regretting it or rethinking it or how it gets applied? Or
I think in Olympia, everybody's watching. I think it's still pretty early in terms of kind of the application and impacts that the CCA and some of the other big laws have had. Certainly, gas prices are kind of one that individuals are focusing on. That said, gas prices, there's lots of different indicators and variables that probably impact the increased cost. In terms of the state's kind of response, again, I think it's probably a wait and see. And kind of as we approach the next session, there needs to be changes. We'll kind of think of it through then.
Well, it's working exactly like the carbon tax would work.
Yeah, it's partially it's a feature, not a bug.
I think it was really made me really happy to see that we're moving ahead in this county on hydrogen for the state.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, as I mentioned at a previous meeting, they're pumping hydrogen now. They have pumps working in filling stations. You can drive in and fill up your car with hydrogen.
It's the approach in terms of kind of like all the above tech, technological approach, I think, is absolutely right. I think there's lots of ways of making sure that we get to carbon zero, and hydrogen's definitely part of that.
The second question I had was, and this may not be for you, Ryan, we could get off the hook, but in this morning paper, there's an article about light rail and how it extends to Everett. And I was surprised to learn that they haven't really decided the path yet. And I was wondering how that affects our planning. Is this normal for a project like this to not quite know where it's going to be?
It's a very good question. This is Brenda White, Local Government Affairs. So the question is there anything more that needs expanded on? The Sound Transit came to mind. It's big in the news right now. I watched the board meeting twice, the recorded. So I encourage you to take a look at that. I can forward the link to the clerks to share. With the stage that they're at is there, there have been alternatives in play for quite some time. So the board decision last week chose in various station options an alternative or an option with an alternative as something to further explore. So it's the DEIS stage. It's the draft environmental impact statement portion of the project. So in some stations, there's two or three alignments they're looking at. Some are narrowed down to two. I don't know that there's really any, there's just with one. There is a community advisory board, and there's an elected board. So that input too, Antomish County has assisted the decisions from the board level. Now with the Sound Transit Board, we're represented by the mayors of Linwood and Everett and our county executive. And they've been very involved. There's just a lot of question in, you know, this long process, something that, you know, is going to be a fixture for a long, long time, and making that right decision where the populations are, where the workforce is. And those aren't easy, certainly as they look at projections on cost. There's been a lot of cost overruns in other portions of the spine and the alignment. So. Well, we're a little further out. It's the longest stretch of the Sound Transit corridor, I think, at 16 miles. So, if that answers your question, it's.
Well, yeah, my question was really about how's it is going to affect the PUDs.
That's right. That was one of your questions.
Where it's going to be exactly.
Right. We are paying very close attention.
Yeah.
There has been for a number of years a technical portion of. Utility that meets regularly with Sound Transit, their engineers. So we're watching, we're commenting where we need to. It is getting closer, so that's what we need to keep an eye on. Those stations are, but we are involved, just to reassure you for that.
So if the issue are the location of the station set and the issue is the path that they'll take to get between stations, is that the, or is it the whole
everything
routing,
is
everything.
Right. No, there's a question of station location,
okay.
The alignment. You know, the voters, there's an alignment that the voters passed a number of years ago. And so with public input, they've been looking at adjusting some of those alignments. But the I-5 corridor, really from 526 dropping into North Everett, still seems to be I-5. But the OMF station, you know, is going to be huge, and then where all the other stations are in our service territory, we really need to stay on top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't mention public opposition in terms of siting configuration. Is that consideration?
Oh yes, I think that's played into a lot of politics. There's
yeah,
a lot of politics
yeah.
that we're not hearing about. Yeah, but there's been obviously I think a rub. Between the counties and location, timing.
Are we getting federal help, federal money? I would think so.
Yes.
Infrastructure
yes.
Act and Infrastructure and Jobs Act, IIJA or something.
I have to look.
Well,
a lot of this is through the RTA that we pay for. We look at our what we pay in our. Car tax every year.
Right.
Yep. So if you fall within, you know, boundaries, there's plenty of us that are paying into it for a long time. That's where the bulk of
But as far as federal dollars, I believe that there has been some federal infusion recently, but I couldn't be specific about that. So, get into it.
Well, I think light rail is a high priority in the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm.
To move us away from cars.
Right, right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Sure, you bet.
Thank you, Brenda. Right, next up is our Connect Up quarterly update, and Kevin Labering and Tim Pep. Good morning, Kevin. Tim.
John. Morning, commissioners.
Morning.
Morning. My name is Kevin Labering, program manager. So I'm here with Tim Pep as Connect Up program leadership. We're excited to be with you today. Our last update was in March 21st of this year. All right, the purpose of our presentation is just to provide our quarterly update to the commission and expectations for today. It's just to remain updated on what we're doing within the program and learning about our next steps. So our agenda, what we'll cover today is we'll look at the program schedule and provide a budget review. We'll also look at the current implementation phase that we're kind of towards the tail end of right now, starting up our next phase. And within that, we'll give update on the meter installation planning, our AMI base station network deployment, systems integration work, training, and internal and external communications, along with next steps within the program. So this slide is just a quick reminder of the components of the program with the AMI network project taking place, Jeff Cohen leading that one. Doris Payne leading our systems integration and our meter data management system projects. Travis Olson leading our meter deployment project. Nick Johnston focusing on the build out of our test environment. And Adam Peretti, whose group is the AMI Technologies group. So high level schedule review. So we're kind of in an overlap stage right now where we are wrapping up our work within the implementation phase. And so this is our systems integration work, which we just had our go live, successful go live June 11th. And so Tim's gonna be talking more about that. Building out our base station network, we'll talk about an update on that, and preparing for our meter deployment, our routes, bringing on employees to help out with that deployment. And then we're also starting up our deployment phase right now. So with our friends and family, meters now being installed. So we have a little over half of our 26 friends and family meters out there and functioning well. We're excited about that. And the day one benefits and customer communications, a lot of communications are taking place right now. Program budget review. So overall, the original budget that was approved by the commission back in January of 2021 was $93.2 million. We're projected at this time to for our cost through the end of the program in 2025 to be $91.4 million. So currently projecting under by $1.8 million. Part of that, just looking at any risks with our budget, I would say that our meter exchange or our time-limited meter exchangers, they're with inflationary pressures, there's a risk that we might have to pay more in order to hire enough staff for that. But right, so this is a potential use of this underspend right now. Currently, right now, we're not planning on using any kind of contingency budget, so we're still looking at using our current budget.
Can you remind us what the contingency amount was?
We said 10%, which was $9 million.
Wow, that's pretty impressive, especially with the inflationary pressures that we've had the last few years.
Yeah, it's been, I would say, one of the things that's helped us out has been internal labor. The team's been able to keep things within scope and also do the work in fewer hours than anticipated. Plus another benefit I would say is our contracted
cost 4 meters. We had that in a favorable cost for meters, which is still within our contract, and we're still holding our vendor too.
You did that?
Yes.
Did a bit of that?
Yes. All right, so let's look at some of the key work that's taken place during our implementation phase. One area of focus is our meter installation planning. So far, we've talked before about supply chain issues with our meters. So far, we've received in-house over 700 electric meters and 3,800 water meters, along with their corresponding modules. We've received 800 of those. So you have to have a water meter and a water module as a set for each installation. So we received that number so far, so they've kind of been trickling in over the last few months. I'll talk about just a second about what's going on with that. Also,
does the module do?
So the module is, it's a communication module, so it's like a radio. So other work that's taken place within this project that's being led by Travis Olson, 75th warehouse is ready for deployment, so everything's ready. We have 700 meters in it right now. We want a lot more meters in there, but it's ready for once we get a full shipment of meters coming in. Friends and family meter deployment started on the 21st, so there's 26 meters that will be installed. We'll be testing those. We've already started testing those through the end of July before we do our general deployment. And so far that's going really well. Some of us in this room have a meter already. We're excited about it. And I was there, they installed an electric meter and a water meter at my house, and both were very smooth. The transition so was really good. So we have about over half of our 26 meters installed so far. So we'll be doing those through July. We have offers made to 3 lead meter deployment technicians, so they will oversee the overall staff, and these are time-limited positions throughout the duration of the program. And on the water side, they have hired 5 time-limited employees for the installation of the meters, and they're also going around. Some of the boxes and lids need to be replaced too, so they're filling in time doing that work too. As far as upcoming activities, advertising our deployment electrician request for a proposal, that will be going out this month. And this will be, once we select an electrician to help out with site repairs that Tim Epp and Colin have brought up before, we expect that award to take place in August or September timeframe, so you'll be seeing that on as a public works contract approval. Meter technician interviews, so later this summer, as we get a better forecast around meters being delivered here, we'll then start advertising and interviewing for our technician positions for the electric meter exchanges. And we'll complete our friends and family deployment, as I mentioned, through the end of July, and then beginning in August, we'll start our general deployment of electric and water meters. So as far as risks and challenges, meter supply chain. So Census, right now the plan is Census will be delivering sustainable quantities starting in August. Originally, their plan was to deliver 63,000 meters to the district this year. And right now we're forecasted to receive 45,000. So what's happened there? So a few months ago, Census, their Flextronics in Mexico is where they manufacture the meters. There was a company-wide audit that took place. So everything was taken pretty much offline for a week. During that time, did the audit, things were good, brought everything back online again. However, they lost a lot of their labor at that time. People went and looked for other jobs. And so they've had a struggle hiring back employees for that. So they're ramping up quite a bit right now, but there is a learning curve for the new employees. And so They're not quite at the capacity that they want to be right now. So we're seeing about getting about two-thirds of the meters, or 75% of the meters that we are expecting this year. Things are getting better. They are hiring more people. They are ramping up on the learning curve, and so we're seeing things getting more positive there. It's just slower than we hoped for it to be.
So really holding these vendors to the bid price seems to me might become a tough job.
Yes, yes.
I don't know how else to say it.
They've talked to us about you know, flexibility on the price, meaning flexibility going up. But we've been holding them to this, and so right now they're still planning on honoring it. We are meeting with them quite a bit. Every week, every other week, talking to them. We've got them coming on site just a couple weeks to talk about their current deliveries that are taking place. We've checked with other utilities too, who are Census customers, and they're experiencing the exact same thing as us. We are definitely being a squeaky wheel and retaining a lot of attention with them. They know that we're coming here and sharing this information with you today. And so we're doing the best we can, and I think we're getting good attention too.
But our specs are usually pretty tight, protecting us in this kinds of situations.
Yes, and we have a good contract.
Does Census manufacture in the U.S. at all?
They used to, and now my understanding is all their manufacturing is in Mexico.
Cheap labor.
There's a benefit there, yes.
Good for the Mexicans.
Yeah, good jobs.
I've never heard of a factory being shut down in Wheaton, Vermont, so there's got to be an interesting story there.
Yes, yeah.
We don't want to know about it. We do our best. Thank you. We get shut down for all this.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the next slide. All right. Here's our meter exchange advance. And we have all these in house now. Those are things you remember a year or two ago when we ordered these. It was quite the delay in trying to get vehicles. And so we're happy we have all these in house, and we have our new branding up there for Connect Up on the vans along with the PUD branding. So they'll see both of these at the same time.
We had 29. Did we buy 20?
30.
Oh, 30.
30,
yeah. So with the other delays you're experiencing, I imagine that might change your plans in terms of selling these, because in terms of the our fleet inventory.
Right.
It might change those plans, right?
Yeah, we'll adjust. I mean, it depends on how many meters, when we get the meters, how long the deployment
is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think if there was a blanket, we'll sell them.
Yeah.
But that may not be the case.
We might decide to keep, it's still 2.5 years out, so
yeah.
We decide to keep at least some of them. They might be a great investment. I know their value is going up, so there's some good things there. All right, and then just a picture of our warehouse. This is where we're having our census meeting in July, and we'll have a pallet of meters there and say, what's missing? And we'll basically talk to them about the importance that we want to fill this warehouse with meters. And then a final slide for myself. So as far as the AMI base station network deployment, so these are the two-way radios basically that are talking to the meters and then relaying that information back to our systems. So recent accomplishments, Jeff Collins leading this project. So we have 93 base stations installed out of 149, so 62% of our base stations installed right now. Regarding permits issued, we have permits for 122 sites, and applications have been either submitted or under review.
We found this on the web.
Within Everett and Edmonds. Our AMI network operations, so we have all base stations installed, need committed to support our friends and family meter deployment, which is in various parts of our district. And all of our, so we did have a risk before regarding supply chain with our base stations and some of the poles. And so we currently, that's been mitigated. Jeff Collins was able to get all the equipment here. So now we have it all in-house. As far as upcoming activities, their project will continue to install base stations at a target rate of 3 base stations per week. And then regarding permits, we had a meeting, we had a leadership meeting with Edmonds just last month to talk about various parts of our relationship with the city of Edmonds. And among there was a discussion around our permits, which had been stalled for the installation of our base stations. It was an overall positive meeting with them. And so we're looking for our next step to have a meeting with their public works director and talk about processing the permits.
So are these permits to install city infrastructure or?
And so it'd be existing poles that we have rights to build on.
The city has to give us permission to put something on the one of our poles, is that?
Yeah, it's to, like, for if we're replacing a pole, they require for us to submit a permit for that.
Is that normal for municipalities?
Mostly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then City of Everett, there was a public comments period that we're currently wrapping up right now. And a few questions from the public that are being addressed. So we're seeing that those will usually be good with those base station locations.
So that permitting is required for our pole replacement program poles during major storms? Okay.
Yeah.
You know more about this?
I do.
I'm taking it way off base.
Sorry, most new construction work, I'll say most, but it's probably close to all new construction work requires permitting anywhere.
Not pole replacements.
But pole replacements would also be done under that. Storm emergency work does not.
Okay. Well, I don't want to belabor this, but I learned something new.
Yeah.
That's why Tim's here.
All right.
Any other questions of so far?
How tall are these poles?
I think they're up to 105 feet. Okay, here's some examples of some of the poles that we have installed, and these are all replacements of prior poles at these locations. And just a shout out to our line crew for installing these. They've come up with a great process. They're coming in under budget too. They're coming up with a great process to efficiency.
They look like a tough punch cut.
They do.
That helps with the job.
It's tough work, yeah.
Yeah.
We're grateful for them.
It's great that you have apprentices and journeymen.
Yes, yeah, people can be learning and growing. All right, we'll now turn the time over to Tim Epp, who will be talking about systems integration, GoLive, communications, and other things.
Morning, Commissioners. Tim Epp, Program Manager, Connect Up. As Kevin mentioned, we had our GoLive on the weekend of June 11th, and I'm happy to report it went spectacularly well. We're very pleased with the cutover weekend and with the state of the systems. We've put in a total of 5 new systems, including integrations to existing systems, updates to functionality within existing systems. It was over 65,000 hours, staff hours of work, in addition to vendor and consulting time. So it's been quite a task and a major milestone for the project team.
Absolutely.
So much good work happened, great teamwork, great coordination, cooperation with our vendors and consultants. We're very pleased with how this went.
Yeah,
so
I'm going to ask the clerk to, I'd like to have this slide. and says, nothing to report.
Nothing to report, yes. My
brain is hidden in my office.
Yeah, we do have.
I'm kidding.
As with any system this big, this complex, there are defects that we have found. There were some that we knew about going in. They were low enough that we felt that we could knock these out in time before we really hit the ground. But, you know, any system of this magnitude has issues and tweaks that need to be made. So team is on it. They are working prioritized issues. And we saw no problem with advancing with our friends and family phase. I see no issues that would hold us back from our mass deployment from the software perspective.
So the collection of data is every 15 minutes, is that?
That's correct. They're measured every 15 minutes at the meter and sent in, and then staggered. It's about a two-hour window where that information makes it all the way back in to our systems, and then can be reflected back on our My SnowPud site for customers to be able to see their own usage. Yeah.
At the APPA conference, there was a good presentation by Mr. Rawson.
Yes.
Very good.
Excellent.
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
He's been in deep with us on this project. So And I will add that it's 15 minutes for residential customers. It's every 5 minutes for commercial, so that they can get a higher level of granularity to see what's going on in their particular
business. And the 15 minutes is, that's not a variable. You can't change it to 38 or.
It is configurable. So
it is.
So that's something though that we would want to make, you know, kind of system-wide level change. But yes. Yeah. Because of the cascading impacts to systems. Yeah, one of the things that we are working on with our vendors is trying to see how we can speed up the delivery of the 15-minute data all the way through to our customers. So that will be a continuous effort that we'll be working with our vendors and improving their products over time.
So any idea, I was surprised to hear the two-hour. Is there any idea what the utilities have been able to get that time down to?
I know that New York City, Con Ed is pushing for near real time.
Okay.
They're really out there leading edge and pushing pushing the vendors, and we're right there with them.
Yeah. Just good.
A bit smaller.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of the ability of someone to look at my SnowPud and look at what they've got turned on at their house.
Yeah.
Be able to have that feedback closer to when they're consuming the power.
Absolutely. We see that as
remember what I was doing 2 hours ago.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily challenging today. You get a monthly bill.
Yes.
And wondering why your usage was so high. And our CSRs do a great job trying to lead customers through that exercise. But this will be a huge tool where we can dial it into a 15-minute window.
Well, and we can learn from Con Ed's being out there in front. And we can learn to not make mistakes.
Yes.
Yes. It's pretty interesting. You know, I have had my previous meter was the interval meter for the pilot.
Mm.
So you go back and look at, and there's just a baseline that your house always runs at, which is, I'm sure, all the things that are plugged in and
refrigerator,
clocks. But there's a nice little, just sort of interesting now. Are you using power all the time and how much of it?
Yeah, that will be interesting. I know in my house.
Yeah.
What did you turn on? What did I turn on? What?
Yeah. You can look at it for a good event.
Yes.
Lights on in the garage.
At some point, do you think you'll survey to find out how many people are checking frequently or?
Oh, absolutely. I think, especially as we want to roll out more and more programs and we want to see how we can actually enable our customers to use that information themselves. Yes, that will be very, very important. We'll be leaning much on our CorpCom department and our energy efficiency groups to help us identify those opportunities. All right, so related to the software, of course, is the training for all the new systems. We divided up our training delivery into three basic phases related to the timing of when our staff would need to know how to use certain functionality within the system. We wanted to keep that learning to use as compressed as possible. So we split up the training into three phases. Phase one is complete. That was all of the training required before we went into this friends and family phase. Phase two is actually the bulk of the training. So that's what we really need before we start in our mass deployment. And so that training is being delivered this month and next month. So prior to August, we'll have that training knocked out. And then the third phase of training is just some of the other miscellaneous training that will need to happen for activities that happen sporadically over time. That tends to be like maintenance activities on equipment, like audio payment cycles, things like that.
So Jim, does this mean that we've already been able to hire the staff?
So the staff that I'm talking about is mainly existing district staff, our customer accounting group, our customer service, metering, telecom. So we are in the process of hiring. We didn't have a slide for that, I believe. We have hired four out of our five water installation people. Our fifth one, I think, is just in the final steps of the hiring process, but that team should be complete. We are in the process of hiring our leads for the electric meter installation, and then we have the job posting up for our meter installation technicians. We are trying to time that. That's getting very challenging with the meter supply that Kevin talked about, and so we're working very closely with HR and trying to make sure that we do optimal hiring there. Good question. I can go back.
Mixed job risks, mixed on-site and remote.
Yeah.
Has any consideration been given to all on-site?
You know, it's been actually, I would say over time, one of the big lessons, this has been a very unique project in that it landed right, you know, most of it occurred during COVID. I would say that risk and that challenge has diminished more and more as the district has matured in its understanding of what it is to work remotely. So I would say this is a small risk at this point.
Right. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, and then internal and external communications, thanks to our corporate communications department, Aaron and team have been knocking this out of the park. We have our district-wide letter going out from John, affectionately, we call it the Dear John letter. It's not a Dear John letter, but it has, so basically announcing we are in our deployment phase. We're there and we're very excited about it. So that letter is going out district wide. And then following that, we also have communications then going out to our initial deployment. So typically 3 or so months before we go to a specific customer's house, they are going to get a letter explaining that we're coming, and there will be a short outage, most likely, for them. And then 2 weeks before we get there, they'll get a postcard, a reminder postcard. 3 days, if we have an email address for that customer, we'll email them 3 days at a time with the final reminder. So then at the door, there'll be a knock by the installer, one more, hey, here to install your meter. And then we will be leaving them a little card with a link to the benefits, more information that they can get online, and then planning another 30 days after that, kind of a welcome to your new meter communication. So really trying to encourage our customers to take advantage of everything that they can with these new meters.
It's well rounded.
Yeah. Super job from our corporate communications team.
And are you going to put a flashing neon thing on the outside of the envelope so they don't throw it away?
Oh, you know, yeah. we can work on that.
Important note on it. He's open.
Yeah, lose your power. You
yeah.
Open it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, hopefully we're hitting them with good information, timely information.
Using multiple.
We are, definitely. And then we'll be partnering up with our corporate communications team that's out doing fairs and festivals throughout the summer. We'll be assisting with staffing in some of those, or at least providing some materials, so we'll have some good community communication going on as well. And then also, we've worked with, working with corporate communications, customer service, to get a feedback loop. How's that communication working? What are we, what kinds of things are we getting back from our customers, and making sure that our communications are answering the questions and addressing the concerns of anyone. Definitely hitting it on all fronts. So here's some images of some of the communications that are going out. You see the John letter there on your left. Postcard in the center. Okay, next steps. The things we say behind John's back. So we will be back for our quarterly update in September. We do have, following up on the discussion about the customer repair policy, we do have an electrician RFP that is going out, should be out shortly if it isn't already. I know that's in contracts and purchasing hands at the moment. We actually hope to be back to award that in August, not September. So you should see us back sooner than the next quarterly.
And it'll be a selection of one.
Correct. We need that single relationship rather than trying to manage multiple. So we will be, as Kevin mentioned, we will be working with Census, getting our regular updates and communicating with them, working through our base station installation. We will be completing our friends and family phase by the next time we're back, and should be on to our deployment. And then hiring will be completed by the time we get back here, and we'll be underway with our general deployment. Very exciting in this transition phase. Final questions, okay.
I'll let you go this time.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
And just some comments. So first of all, I agree, Mark Rossen did a great job in his presentation. It was really interesting to understand the database system is agnostic. There's not one vendor connected with the meters that, different meters over time. And so it was very well received. The presentation was, lots of great questions. This is maybe a strange question, but we're building all this infrastructure. Is it anything that is safe or realistic that we could offer the use of some of this infrastructure by other, like municipalities, for their meters? I mean, it just seems like a potential source of income.
Absolutely. That's been a conversation with, I know earlier, with City of Everett, and then most recently, City of Edmonds. That also came up. Yes.
Okay.
The short answer is yes, that is something that we've talked about. These are very early discussions,
but
definitely a possibility.
And then I will say, I'm one of the, I think I did one of the friends and family meters. Unfortunately, I wasn't home in the meter there, my wife was, but she reported that power was out for about 2 minutes. Very smoothly. Had multiple communications sites, dear John, postcard, opt-out information, some of it in the mail, some of it electronic. So I'm very impressed with the, early and often communication process.
Thank you.
Yeah, excellent job, Tim and Kevin, with the update. And I just want to pile on to Tim's comments. The system integration work, that was an absolute Herculean effort by Crispy and lots of groups, but certainly the IT did a lot of heavy lifting, and just an amazing outcome from that much work. Stuff that is just, at least in my mind, super complicated, super sophisticated.
Well, it's core to the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super proud of the team.
The company.
Yeah. All right. Next up is.
Can we take a short break? Can we take a short break?
Oh, okay. Let's see. It's just a moment. It is now 9:49. Let's call it 9:50. Let's come back at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
It is now 10 o'clock, and we're resuming our morning session. We'll continue now with the wholesale water agreement.
Yes, next up is the 2023 wholesale Honor agreement and rate proposal with the City of Arlington and the City of Granite Falls and Christina Hunt.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
I'm Christina. I'm the manager out at the water utility. Bringing today an updated agreement with wholesale water with the City of Arlington, as well as proposed rates with the City of Arlington and the City of Granite Falls. And there's no action today. I'm really just going over some of the logistics on this. So the Arlington Wholesale Water Agreement was originally entered into with the district back in July of 1998. It continued on through December 2018, and then when it did expire, we mutually agreed because we had the time to come together and go through the agreement and update it. The revised agreements have been reviewed by both the district and the city, as well as our legal. And then since 1998, both the district and the city have done quite a few water improvements, water system plan improvements, and updates, among other things, that kind of warrant the need to update this agreement. So just a few changes that were included in the new agreement. We cleaned up the map showing the line of demarcation and the point of delivery at the city's master meter on 172nd Street. We also took out the outdated wholesale rate formula. We're moving forward with doing rate review with FCS, which I'll get into a little bit when we look at the rate proposal for the two cities. But we did take this out with the provision that in the future, we'll look at these adjustments with the board as needed. We also adjusted the dates on which we provide notice to the cities. We actually made this along with the City of Granite Falls. We moved this out from 45 days to 60 days. And then we also added an operational plan. This really just calls out the communication between the district and the cities and how we communicate with each other when there are operationally impacting events. And then again, in the packet, you can also see these maps showing kind of the drawing of the master meter and the location of where that sits. Those are all the updates I have for the agreement. I don't know if you have any questions before I move on into the rules. With the rates for City of Arlington and City of Granite Falls, we haven't looked at those since 2020. We did want to update the agreements with the City of Granite Falls and the City of Arlington before we did that. when we moved forward with that, we went for a common industry standard. Away from the calculations we were doing previously. They were a bit more transparent this way. And we looked at three different cost recovery components, those including the operations and maintenance expenses, which are any of those expenses that are on the assets that are eligible for providing water to the cities. We also looked at depreciation expense of those eligible assets that cannot be otherwise maintained. And then the other component that comes into this is return on investment. However, with both the cities of Granite Falls and Arlington, they had previously paid for their GFCs when they connected, so that did not get applied to the calculations. And then the cost allocation is actually based on their water usage, including capacity, peaking, and public fire protection related costs. As of right now, since 2020, the current rates for City of Arlington and City of Granite Falls have been at 225 and 220 per CCF. When we took a look at their at the operating expenses, depreciation, taking into account their actual water usage, their consumption, we determined that really we were pretty well in line with their costs. And we're only looking at a 1% increase with City of Arlington, moving that rate to 227. And a 2.4% increase with City of Granite Falls, moving that to 225. City of Granite Falls has the three master meters and Arlington just has one.
Yeah, what?
The part of the difference is they do have, Arlington only has one master meter, whereas City of Granite Falls has three. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, right now we're looking for coming back to you on July 11th for consideration and action on the resolution to execute the wholesale water agreement with the City of Arlington. At that time, we'll also do a public hearing
on the proposed wholesale water rates for both cities of Arlington and the city of Grand Falls. Then on July 25th, we'll come back to adopt those for both cities. And those rates will not take effect until September 1st.
Could you refresh my memory about the source for the public water for these two?
They're coming from the Lake Stevens Wells.
Oh. And does the city or does PUD have any conservation guidelines for water consumption?
Well, we encourage conservation, yeah, but I don't know if Brian can answer that.
I can add a little bit. So Brent Wood, AGM of the Water Utility. So we do encourage it. We do, you know, just like the toys that we provided you as far as what we get from the city of Everett.
Right.
And actually a lot of their water, so 75% of their water comes from the city of Everett too. So it's Lake Stevens Wells and the city of Everett where their water comes from. So we try to provide the shower heads,
yeah,
to the events for Granite Falls and city of Arlington too. All the different moisture monitors, mm-hmm, right, those facilities for them to try to encourage conservation.
I would say that's going to be one of the advantages of having the AMI meters
right
on the water system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it won't be too many years before we can implement a conservation program relying on the AMI meters for measurement.
And right now, the wholesale master meters are, we see them in our SCADA right now. So we're seeing the flows from both cities daily basis, mm-hmm, what they're using. Right now, Arlington is considerably higher because they've had an emergency situation in their system where one of their main reservoirs is out of service. It's supposed to be July. It's supposed to think they're supposed to get their new roof by August. They're supposed to have it constructed. So hopefully, they'll have the new tank online sometime in September. So we're really working with them, communicating with them, and that's part of the operational plan. Communicating with them, trying to do that on a daily basis. Impacts both the city and the community as far as the usage.
Thank you.
So, on water efficiency, so I understand we'll be able to do our own with our own customers, the wholesale customers, that's sort of left up to them. So, if a city wants to do something, are any of the cities doing water conservation programs?
Yeah. I think they all are trying to encourage conservation, but you're right. I mean, our agreement does not require them to conserve. They are limited. So City of Arlington, as an example, is limited to 1,000 gallons a minute. That's the capacity that they purchased in our system back in 1995, 1998. So they're limited to what they can take from us. But we don't have any control over your program. But I think everyone thinks it's in their best interest to conserve water.
Yeah. We're really blessed with water right now. I was talking to that APP, I was talking to people from Arizona and other dry states, and they're watering lawns. They're allowed to water every other day or 3 days a week, and they're really limiting watering lawns.
They go with my approach, the brown yards are much easier. Let the lawn die.
Yeah.
I like brown yards.
It's well, we have a lot of lawns, it's just fine.
There you go.
I do have a question on this next steps slide. And I may be confusing something, but agenda item 5A this afternoon is introduction of a resolution. It's an introduction of a resolution. Is this the same thing or is this something else?
It is the same thing. It's just by law, we have to introduce the resolution.
Right, it wasn't on this timeline.
10 days.
All right, thank you. Thank you
so
very
we're
much.
Just introducing the one resolution, though, right?
All right. That's correct.
And I will add, we do give City of Arlington and City of Granite Falls conservation kit packages that we also receive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions?
I have none.
Thank you. All right. Excellent job, Christina. Next and last on the agenda is Climate Commitment Act, Cost Burden Forecasting Revisited, and Ian Hunter. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Commissioners. Ian Hunter, Policy Analyst in the Power Supply Department. We're here once again to talk about the Climate Commitment Act. So what are we actually going to be talking about today? This is just an informational briefing. We're not looking for any action today. We're going to talk a little bit and review the CCA. We're going to talk about the final rules about how the CCA determines what a utility's cost burden is related to the program. We're going to discuss our allocation of no-cost allowances that we've actually received from the Department of Ecology. And then we're going to talk about a staff recommendation to add a clarifying update to the forecast that the commission approved late last year. So we've got two parts. We've got the kind of the review, and then we've got the going forward, what we would like to forecast and change. So we'll jump right into the review. The final rules for the cost burden were finalized last year. There's a 4-year compliance period for the first CCA kind of look, which is 2023 through 2026. So we're in the first compliance period now. In order to figure out what the cost burden is, the Department of Ecology looks at two things. They look at your total load forecast, your total retail load, and they look at the resources that you're using to serve that load. Those forecasts needed to be approved by the governing board, and they can be updated through July of this year. So we had an opportunity to provide them a forecast previously, which is what you approved in the appendix in the CEIP. They took that information and they cranked it through their formulas, and they gave us an allocation of no cost allowances. So now we have an opportunity to provide an update to that forecast to potentially change that allocation. So you might be asking, what are the actual sources of the cost burden? So how are we actually going to be incurring costs under the CCA? We've got two primary sources where we might see greenhouse gas coming to us through our portfolio. Number one, the big source is BPA, of course. BPA is overwhelmingly predominantly clean with hydro and no non-emitting resource, but Bonneville, like every other utility, does have to make balancing purchases in the marketplace for periods when they just don't have the right capacity in the right spots. They do need to go into the market and purchase those unspecified energy products. And anytime an unspecified energy product is purchased, it has an assumed amount of carbon associated with it that Bonneville then has to add to their portfolio. Because we are a large off-taker of Bonneville, that passes right through into our Bonneville share. The other kind of avenue where we might see greenhouse gas come to our portfolio is through our balancing purchases. So just like Bonneville has to make purchases in the market that may be unspecified, we may find ourselves in a situation where we have to do the same. And so if those purchases fall under the rules where we might be assigned that unspecified attribution, that would be given to our portfolio, and that might be another source where we might incur costs under the CCA. But I will note that our direct owned and contracted resources are all carbon free. So the only avenue in our portfolio is Bonneville and any purchase that we have to make on the market that's unspecified.
Ask you a hypothetical. If we were to go with like the Southwest Power Pool, we were to buy from them, and part of it would be the same situation. So if they had a mix and some of that was included GHGs, then it would be the same situation no matter who our.
Not necessarily. So right now we are talking about the new markets plus that SPP is offering.
Right.
They're running a number of task forces, one of which is the greenhouse gas task force, which is trying to figure out how you attribute greenhouse gases between different market participants.
Okay.
There are proposals to see whether you can track greenhouse gases through the marketplace, and there's rulemaking that Ecology is engaging in. They actually just issued their notice of proposed rulemaking for how markets and the CCA are gonna interact with each other. So you could make an assumption that maybe there's an unspecified aspect to it, but there's going to be rules that are going to be put in place, and then the Markets Plus development is also working on how to sort out these attribution issues. So all being worked on at the moment.
Great, thank you. Interesting.
So our previous forecast, and I'll just take this opportunity to say, if you have questions, please just feel free to jump in. What did we forecast previously? What was approved in the last appendix? We had a total retail load of 6.7 million. We said our total BPA that we're going to take on an average annual basis is around 7 million. And then we estimated that maybe 5% of our total retail load might be a good factor to use for our balancing purchases. which is also consistent with what the California market kind of allows for utilities to claim as their unspecified purchases. So that totals about 7.3 megawatt hours on average annual basis. One note, this is for 2023. As I mentioned, the compliance period is 4 years long. Just so that we didn't, you know, clutter up the slide, we're kind of just using 1 year as an example, which is indicative for all 4 years, but the numbers are going to be a little different every year. So these energy sources have carbon intensity associated with them. So if you'll notice, the 7 million megawatts from Bonneville amounts to about 123,000 metric tons of CO2. And our balancing purchases, even though it's significantly less megawatts, yeah, actually has more metric tons associated with it just because the carbon intensity is so much higher on a unspecified megawatt. The difference, I think, Bonneville is like 0.01 metric tons per megawatt, whereas balancing purchases that are unspecified have a 0.47 attribution factor. So significantly larger.
Because it's assumed they're all from emitting sources, is that right?
I believe it uses an assumed natural gas carbon intensity, and that's actually established by statute. It's not like they're going out into the marketplace and surveying what's actually generating.
Yeah.
It's a statutory number, which could change in the future, but for now, it's just an established number that they have to use, which I believe was based on kind of the carbon intensity of a natural gas plant. So our forecast said, in total, we would expect to receive about 271,000 no-cost allowances to offset the cost of the program. So when Ecology took our forecast, what did they do with it? How did we actually get to the number we got from Ecology in the first kind of posting of the allowances? They took our total retail load, same total retail load, but then they said, well, you claimed more resources than you had load. So what we're going to do is we're going to make a decision and just say all of your load is going to be served by Bonneville. So we're going to just trim out those balancing purchases. We're just going to do 100% back and forth. So total retail load, 6.7 million. Total BPA received, 6.7 million. And they discounted the balancing purchases. But Bonneville is a participant in the energy imbalance market. So whereas they do balancing purchases on an energy basis, which may be hourly, weekly, monthly in the marketplace, they also are participating in the EIM as a new EIM participant. And those purchases are all considered unspecified currently, but they're not factored into Bonneville's carbon intensity yet. There's a stagger factor with the way EIM works and the way that carbon intensity works with Bonneville. So Bonneville's carbon intensity doesn't yet reflect the EIM purchases. So what Ecology is saying is they asked Bonneville, hey, can you guys give us an idea of what the carbon intensity is of all that energy that you're buying through the EIM? And Bonneville said, well, you know, you could probably do a rough approximation and say 4.5% of the energy we're getting is unspecified. So they took that 4.5%, applied it to all Bonneville purchases across all Washington customers to come out with their EIM balancing purchases of 307,000 megawatt hours. So that's a factor that we did not take into account when we did our forecast. We looked specifically at our market purchases that Power Trading Floor takes care of. So this is a new variable that they added in, but it's very close to what we assumed is 5% of our total retail load. So we got to a final CCA emissions factor of about 246,000 no-cost allowances. So different variables that were very similar and got us to a reasonably close spot in terms of the forecast, but things that we didn't consider and things they didn't consider. And we were about, you know, we got about 24,000 less than we were expecting or that we forecast. And we just talked about what those EIM balancing purchases are. When Bonneville is participating in the CAISO, those unspecified purchases come in and they're not factored in. So the impact to our no-cost allowance allocation, you know, we didn't get the 130,000, or we didn't forecast the 130,000 from the EIM balancing. We did factor in our balancing purchases, and so that created that mismatch. And I do want to be very clear again that the EIM balancing energy is separate and apart from both what we do on our trading floor and what Bonneville does on their trading floor, because their trading floor is accounted for in their carbon intensity. So that's factored into that overall calculation that we've already taken into account. So pause there for any questions. That's how we forecasted, how Ecology forecasted, and kind of the lay of the land today.
So the EIM participation at BPA is sort of a new thing, right, for them?
It's reasonably new, yeah.
Like within the last year?
Last couple of years, and I might look.
Ian, the things you get to work on, this is just the most bizarre. The goal is to net us out, right? It's just bizarre. That, I mean, I understand the state has an interest in accounting for it all. Doing that makes a lot of sense. But
right.
This whole thing of getting credits, and there's no true up, is there?
So there's language in the statute that says once you get through a compliance period, that the Department of Ecology can correct a future forecast for what happened in the past. Now, Ecology has said that the intent of that language, from their point of view, is to account for major differences, like a new PUD is formed, or you lose a major portion of your load, or something that's, you know, significant. That said, that's not how the statute necessarily reads, and so a utility could argue that any difference in what was forecasted and what actually happened needs to be trued up. Because we're only in the first year of the first compliance period, that hasn't been tested and likely won't be tested until there's an actual compliance burden and cost that needs to be settled up.
So it would seem like other utilities must be having, like the block utility, block only, but they have a bigger disparity, or it just seems like this has got to be, it's not just us, I'm sure.
Yeah, any Bonneville customer is likely going to have some difference in their forecast because of that EIM balancing. But in most cases, depending on how the customer positioned themselves in their forecast, they may be better off because they're getting more no-cost allowances because Ecology added this extra variable in.
Well, the problem also is it's based on a forecast. So we started out this year buying more on the market than we had forecast to be, but we're already in the hole.
Perhaps. So there are rules around how carbon is attributed to utilities in Washington state. So if we were buying on the market, there's the possibility that it's not necessarily going to be our compliance obligation. It's going to be the entity importing the energy into the state on their transmission. So there's some complicated rules about how you actually look at and attribute the carbon for a market purchase, which may alleviate some of our compliance obligation. Of course, the generators on the other side know they're going to have a compliance obligation, so they build that into their energy price. So they're selling their energy at a higher price, so we're paying the compliance obligation, but not directly. So there's a lot of factors to consider with the no-cost allowances, whether we're paying a direct or indirect compliance cost, who's taking the money, who's responsible, that are all still being worked out.
Exciting work.
That's one word for it. Any other questions before we move on to kind of what we are looking at for the future? All right. So.
No, I just. It seems to me you estimate and you estimate and you estimate. And there's no true up. I mean, you estimate, you have. How you perform, but there's no opportunity for true-up.
Yeah, it is not a perfect system, to be frank.
Some of the stuff, the data that's going into this, or the assumptions, are a little.
Yeah, it's tough basing.
Over the top.
It's tough when your allowance of no-cost, or when your no-cost allowances are based on forecasts, but your compliance obligation is based on actuals. So it does create, you know, a potential for you to have too many allowances, for you to have too few. But barring that, you know, if you were to not get a forecast, then you could be put in a position where you have a compliance obligation and you may not have enough at the time, so you didn't know you needed to participate in an auction, for example. And so if you didn't receive your allowances until after the fact, it puts you in a more difficult position because then you're having to retroactively go back and purchase allowances, which may be much higher priced than if you'd had the chance to plan ahead. So it's a double-edged sword for sure.
In the famous words of our CFO, this is wonky accounting stuff.
Sorry.
Well, wonky. Okay.
All right. So I'm going to give you the recommendation for the forecast update right up front. So staff is recommending that we update the forecast, the appendix in the CEIP, the Clean Energy Implementation Plan, in two ways. One is an actual update. So we would actually put in our most recent load forecast for 2023 through 2026. Now, our load forecast has changed since late last year. We're seeing different numbers for 2023 through 2026 time period. And so we want to make sure that we're providing Ecology with the most up-to-date load forecast that we've got, and the one that we're also using for our other planning documents and processes. The second is a clarification of how you're applying our resources to load for compliance purposes. So because that CCA appendix was approved before we kind of saw Ecology's methodology, we just put all of our resources in that may have a carbon obligation associated with them. That's why the resource forecast exceeded our total retail load. What we would do in this case is we would clarify that if we're going to make sure that our forecast is limited to the same amount of our total retail load, we're going to specify which resources actually contribute to that total retail load compliance obligation, which would be the 5% of our balancing purchases, since we're usually only buying an unspecified purchase to serve load that we need the load for. And then the remainder would be used by Bonneville. So this is a determination strictly for compliance purposes. It doesn't change our other forecasts or how we are attributing other compliance obligations. It's strictly just for purposes of CCA compliance. So a little bit more specificity, that load forecast update is gonna be the brand new forecast that we've seen that we're using in our other planning processes. We are applying those balancing market purchases first, and then the remainder be served by BPA. And we would limit it to the amount of our total retail load. We'd no longer be putting in all of our resources. It's just what we're using to serve load from a compliance standpoint. So why are balancing market purchases assigned first? And we want to be pretty clear on this. They do represent the necessary hourly marketing needed to align our portfolio to our load. As a slice customer, because we purchase slice, we're responsible for meeting our remaining load service after our BPA slice and block allocations. So our hourly obligations are our own, which means that we may need to take action to meet any shortfalls we might have on that hourly basis. So over the course of a year, we make those wholesale energy purchases to balance our loads and resources and integrate our renewable resources as well, which are unspecified and may result in an incurred CCA obligation. So what are the actual specific changes? We've talked high level, our load forecast, and again, this is just for 2023, but the trend continues for the full 4-year compliance period. Our previous forecast for 2023 was 6.7 million. Our new load forecast is 6.8-ish. So about 100,000 megawatt hours increase in that year. And that's roughly the same. I think it grows a little bit each year over time. So it grows a little bit from 100,000, but roughly that's the magnitude we're talking. And then when we're looking at the balancing purchases, we're using the new load forecast number of 6.8 million. We're allocating 343,000, 5% of that to load first from a compliance standpoint. And then we're using BPA to serve the remainder. So how does this actually affect our allocation of no-cost allowances? Because the increase in the load forecast slightly increases the total amount of resources we're taking, that results in a small increase in the amount of no-cost allowances. Because our market purchases were higher carbon content than BPA, we also get an increase compared to what our previous Ecology calculated forecast was. And so if Ecology only uses our increased load forecast and our market purchases that we're now saying are 5% on top, We would expect to see an increase of about 14,000 allowances per year. So the most recent auction price for no-cost allowances was about $56, which means that we'd be saving a little under $800,000 per year over the course of the compliance period. So that's if those are the only variables that Ecology picks up and doesn't do anything else. But that EIM balancing factor is something that we don't actively calculate. This is something that Ecology calculates and puts in on our behalf. So because we didn't calculate it, we didn't factor it into our appendix, and we wouldn't plan to factor it into our appendix because Ecology is doing it on their end. But if Ecology takes our updates and then adds the EIM balancing factor that they calculate, we could see a more significant increase in the number of no-cost allowances. So if they accept our revised forecast, they add the EIM purchases to our forecast consistent with their methodology, we could see an increase of approximately 120,000 no-cost allowances, bringing our total from the 260,000 to 380,000 per year. So just to, and 120,000 at $50, that's somewhere in the range of $7 million per year for over the course of the compliance period. So a little bit of a range, 800,000 to 7 million. We would hope to see that balancing factor for EIM purchases put in from Ecology exactly the same way they did it last time. But again, it's not a factor that we necessarily have control over. So our forecast update that you would expect to see in the appendix for 2023, we'd be seeing 150,000 metric tons of CO2 associated with market purchases, 113,000 associated with Bonneville for 263,000 metric tons of CO2, and therefore no cost allowances. Ecology, if they add in their EIM balancing factor at 4.5% of Bonneville's take, that's an additional 124,000 metric tons of CO2, and therefore an additional 124,000 no cost allowances, which could bring our potential allocation up to 387,000. So how does the update interact with the Clean Energy Implementation Plan? So if you recall, this is an appendix to the CEIP. We approved the CEIP as kind of our roadmap for how we plan to comply with the Clean Energy Transformation Act, which is the other piece of clean energy policy that we are beholden to and why we get no-cost allowances from the CCA in the first place. It uses the same information and data for our resource load forecasts. We are updating the load forecast, so that would be a new component that we'd be adding in, but in the interest of providing the most up-to-date information, we feel that's prudent. It would not change any of our CEIP targets. It wouldn't change any of our CEIP compliance obligations. It's distinct from CETA and its compliance obligations as a CCA requirement. So we're looking at CCA compliance and we're looking at CETA compliance as two separate compliance obligations that we have to fulfill that both look at and measure different things. So next steps, we are recommending that we update the CEIP appendix for the cost burden forecasting to include that updated load forecast and the clarification on the resource amounts we forecasted. We would plan to bring that appendix for all 4 years and a resolution for approval at the next commission meeting on July 11th. Any questions?
It's just fascinating.
The interaction of clean energy policy that is coming down in the past few years is definitely interesting.
Yes.
But I will say that it feels like we're in a very good position to comply with the clean energy policies that are coming out. We have an amazing portfolio, and it's just making sure that we navigate all the requirements correctly.
First, thank you for doing this, making sure we can save money. I mean, it's astonishing that we have to put the manpower, people power into doing this, but thank you. I have an overarching question. Why is it so hard to account for carbon? It would seem like you know all the sources of electricity and their carbon attributes. And you know who buys, who sells, who resells. It would seem like it's one big spreadsheet that would not be insurmountable. Is it because multi-jurisdictions, or what's the challenge?
We could have a full commission presentation on just that question, I think. I think at the highest level, you have multiple clean energy policies across different states that look at and measure energy carbon content differently. Even just within Washington, CETA is looking at an average annual megawatt hour number, and the CCA is looking at metric tons of carbon. And so even right there, you have a potential disconnect in the way that you measure those two things. Getting back to a higher level question of, you know, how do you measure carbon on the grid? It's true that you know what's generating in any particular hour. It's true that you know what load is present on the system in any particular hour. You can overlay a contractual framework on top of it that might get you 80 or 90% of the way there, but it's impossible to essentially color code electrons, yeah. Right? So you can't tell for sure that.
Oh, I understand. Yeah. You don't know which electrons you're getting. That's always the case.
Right. So, you know, the simple example, if you have two loads and two resources, one clean, one emitting, you know, 20 megawatts and 20 megawatts, you know, and one clean, one dirty generator, or both 20 megawatts generating, how do you assign the 20 megawatts to each load if they are both buying unspecified from the market? And that's kind of the struggle of the question that you're asking.
I have a question about greenhouse gases.
Jim.
Okay. Just quickly looking up the components of greenhouse gases, because they're calling them GHGs. These include carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, hydrochlorofluorocarbons, hydrofluorocarbons, and ozone. So is ecology looking at all of the components of greenhouse gases, because methane is the most dangerous, as we know.
So my understanding,
in the short term.
Yes. So my understanding is that CCA does look at all greenhouse gases, but they convert them into a CO2 equivalent.
I see.
So, you know, methane has a CO2 equivalent conversion factor, which I don't know off the top of my head.
Well, you don't.
I know, right? But if a power plant were to emit methane as part of its production process, that would be included in its reporting to ecology, and that plant's CO2 equivalent factor would be much higher than if it was just CO2 being emitted.
Okay, thank you. That's good.
It's fascinating. It almost seems like we need the federal government to step in and sort of set up a framework or something so that we can, right? Because if we're buying solar from Arizona, you would think that would have no carbon content.
Yeah,
instead, it comes in unspecified, probably, with full carbon content of some potential natural gas.
Yeah, and it gets complicated because then you're looking at regulating interstate commerce. FERC tries to do that with transmission, but you know, even FERC runs into problems sometimes. And of course, any federal standard is always going to be a minimum, right? States can always have higher standards than whatever the federal government mandates. So,
yeah, I'm just thinking for the accounting, it just doesn't seem insurmountable to do.
It's your next career, Sam.
I'm going to start a spreadsheet, a Google Doc right now.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really grateful.
Thank you, Commissioners. Thank you, Ian. Excellent job. And we say it often, but we are very fortunate to have folks like Ian working on these types of issues. Very fortunate. That wraps up the presentations for this morning.
All right. One second. It is now 10:39 a.m. and the meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m. Have a good lunch.